Hello and welcome to episode 109 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
I'm Alex.
Hey, Alex. We have Alex back on, who is a former podcaster. It used to be the duo running Rugged Marriage. Now we bring him on because he's good at InfoSec stuff, and we don't usually know what we're talking about. So this week, we are going to be talking about the Meltdown and Spectre vulnerabilities that have been unleashed upon the world.
Yeah.
It's a couple of exploits found in Intel processors, and if you don't know what any of that meant, you're free to skip this week if you want to. We're going to try to keep it high level, then go down into the deep level and play a little bit, then come back out for application. So just hang on and go for the ride with us this week. So without further ado, let's get started. So we have these vulnerabilities that I think they were originally talked about as Intel chip vulnerabilities, right?
Yes.
But it turns out
now they're kind of everyone? Well, okay. So Meltdown and Spectre are two different things.
Yeah.
But they both impact the CPU, and they are both announced on the same day and by the same group.
And it's so, actually like three vulnerabilities, right?
Well, this is the beginning of an avalanche. Get ready to hear a lot about CPUs, because this is the beginning.
Buckle in.
I saw this great GIF online by a security researcher on the day all this dropped, and he was like, because this is January 2nd that we all found out about this, and it went something like this. He said, he goes 2018, it's like, hey, 2017, you think you are bad? Hold my beer. And then it was a gif of a dude being rammed into by a truck, and he had like all this padding on.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah.
And when I first saw about these vulnerabilities like being announced, like everybody on Twitter was like, "Okay, we're all screwed here,"
which is an exaggeration.
It's
start there,
yes. And we'll get into that. So from a large level, I'm going to try to explain what I understand of this. Of what these exploits go after, and we'll let you correct everything.
Okay.
From what I understand, so all of this hinges on what is called speculative execution in CPUs. So an analogy to this could be like say you're giving your order to a barista. They see you coming, and they guess what you're going to, they have an educated guess about which drink you want and start making it before you ask it. And then if it's right, you got your drink super fast. If not, they throw it out, start again. And the theory was that the stuff that the coffee they threw out was not accessible, but it turns out the coffee is still in the trash can and could be picked up by, you know, a stranger who intended to grab that coffee for some unknown reason. But that's kind of my understanding. What do you say about that?
I would say that's a pretty good overview. So continuing with the barista analogy, just to flesh it out. So again, these are two different things that really play with two different aspects of how a CPU works. So the first thing is, so that's right. So speculative execution, basically the barista says, I think you're going to want this because the last 99 times you came in, you wanted this. So I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to make this coffee for you. And if you don't want it, if you want it, bam, here it is. If you don't want it, I throw it away and I get you what you actually wanted. And no big deal. The other thing is what's called out of order execution, which, keeping with the barista, she can be steaming the milk at the same time she's pouring the coffee shot. Mm-hmm. And so you can do those two things at the same time, because right, steaming the milk does not depend on the coffee shot being poured and vice versa. If you think of it like the analogy I've been kind of using this week is like recipe. And I'm okay, literally going to steal this whole hog from a guy who wrote this up. But if you have a recipe and it's like, okay, I want to, I've got a pumpkin, and I'm going to slice and dice the pumpkin and chop it into cubes. Then I'm going to cook the pumpkin pieces for 5 minutes in butter. Then I'm going to blend all the heated melted cubes of pumpkin in a food processor. Then you're supposed to put a chicken into an oven for 3 hours. Then you're going to make chicken broth using the chicken, and then you blend the broth with the pumpkin seeds to the desired consistency, right? And now mm-hmm. you've got like this pumpkin soup.
Right.
Well, if you're a good chef, you can say, okay, I can be doing the pumpkin stuff while the chicken is cooking. I can do those two things at the same time. I don't have to wait. I can even start the chicken before I even consider touching the pumpkins to chop mm-hmm. it up into cubes. And that's out of order execution. Technically, step four is put the chicken into the oven. And that's fine, except for, like you were saying, computers, CPUs specifically, will try to do that for things when there's two ways it can go. So if the chicken gets cooked to a certain temperature, then I'm going to cook the pumpkins for 10 minutes instead of 5 minutes. So okay. depending on how much you cook the chicken depends on how much or actually vice versa. The way I'm going to cook the chicken is dependent on how the pumpkin comes out. Well, the CPU says, okay, I'm going to do these two things at the same time. And since the pumpkin 99 times comes out this way, I'm going to cook the chicken this way. And then it finds out, oh, oops, the pumpkin came out the other way. Now I need to go back and redo that. And so CPUs specifically have their own memory that's separate from standard computer memory. And so what they do is they put this speculation that they create from these out-of-order processes into their own memory, and it kind of sits there. And there's what's called kernel memory, which is the operating system and computer's memory. And there's user memory, which is memory you have access to, or your applications have access to. So if I've got Slack in my browser, Slack has part of my computer memory that it's interacting with and part of my CPU memory that it's interacting with. There's a part it's not able to touch. Well, basically what these exploits do is they use that speculative out of order execution in order to determine an application can determine what is happening in that other memory. And if they can determine what's happening in that other memory, they can consume it and then they can send it off somewhere. So these vulnerabilities are what's called a privilege elevation. And so basically something that has a certain number of rights, so a user is now able to see stuff that only an administrator or even higher than an administrator, an operating system, is able to see. So you can get things like Wi-Fi passwords. You can get things like credit card transactions, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what makes this especially – the reason why people were pulling out their hair terrified is virtualized computing.
Why is that a thing?
Okay, yeah. So virtualized computing is when you take one computer and you make it think it's like five computers. Okay. Or 100 computers.
Yeah, like running Windows on the same, like running, not boot camp, but like VMware parallels on my Mac.
With VMware VirtualBox.
Using Windows and,
Yeah. Yep. And so, so basically what you do is you're in a computer, and so what happens is you create a virtual machine and it has a virtual CPU, virtual RAM, virtual storage. But really, that CPU is being shared by all the virtual machines in that hypervisor. So if you think of like cloud computing, it's just virtual machines.
Oh.
And so my computer now, if I can from my computer, I can run this exploit and I can find out what every other virtual machine is doing in the CPU through this speculative execution. And so that gives me the ability now to see. So if I'm on the same thing as, say, Bank of America, and Bank of America has a VM on the same hypervisor as me, and that VM is handling all transactions for their major businesses. Now I can see what those transactions are and get password information for those VMs, and potentially it can give you enough information where you can figure out what VM system you're on and how it's creating your VM, and you can what's called an escape, and you can go from being in control of a virtual machine to being in control of the what's called the hypervisor, the physical device itself that's running all these VMs. And then now you are God over every VM on that system.
Oh, that's bad. That's very bad.
And that is why everyone was freaking out. And that's why Amazon and Microsoft were like, we're patched. We're good. We're patching right now. We're almost done. We're totally patched. Don't worry about it.
I just have a quick question, if that's okay. All your explanation so far is really clear, and it is really helpful, I think, in kind of explaining in fairly layman's terms what's going on here. But the term hypervisor is one that I must admit I was fairly new to.
Okay.
So who has control over that? Is that just like luck of the draw? Like what server you're... web apps and stuff, like your websites and stuff, are on compared to other companies, like you said, Bank of America, if I'm on the same one as Bank of America and whatever, then someone could get in and see all of the passwords or something that are stored for that. Like, who has sort of control over which hypervisor you're in? Or is it computer specific? Like, if you have one machine running a bunch of virtual machines, that is that its own?
Yeah, so the short answer is it depends. The short answer is, if you're using like Amazon's cloud or Microsoft cloud or Google's cloud, it's sort of luck of the draw for the most part. You're However, right. there are – so if I'm creating a server in Amazon, I can create that server and just say, hey, just wherever you have free space, just create my server. That's most of cloud computing. Mm-hmm. But there are what are called reserved computers, where you can say, I want this computer and I want over here. And then you can also request computers where you say, I want this physical computer to be just for me and nobody else. So it's possible to say, I want this physical computer for myself. And hopefully people like Bank of America are doing some of those things. But most of the part in the cloud, it's luck of the draw. So one thing to keep in mind about this is a privilege escalation. This is not a remote code execution. And so what that difference means is, remote code execution means if I am not already on your computer, I can do something to get onto your computer and impact your computer. A privileged escalation you already have to be on the computer for it to work.
Right. So you have to have physical access to the computer or like local, physical access?
Yeah. You have to have some sort of access to the computer. So again, if I'm in the cloud and I just spin up a server on the cloud and I can do this, I can, spinning up is the term that's used in for creating servers in these cloud environments. We call it spinning up. But if I create a server in one of these clouds, then, and I can trigger Meltdown, I can then get all the, or Spectre, really, I can then determine everything that's happening on the CPU for every virtual machine on that computer. Mm-hmm. And when I say you become kind of God when you take over the hypervisor, that doesn't necessarily mean you can see what's happening on the virtual machines themselves. It's possible. There are hacks that can do that. But more it means that I can do things like delete things and create things, and I can take the data that's going here and then copy it somewhere else, so then I can decrypt it later on my own and see what information is there. So there are a lot of powerful things you can do. Basically, it's considered a virtual machine escape is what it's called, where you get from the virtual machine to the hypervisor and the virtual machine to the physical computer. And if you can do that, that's considered one of the worst exploits imaginable. Those get fixed super, super quick, and people make a lot of money for finding them because they're really, really hard. It's really hard to do.
Hey guys, it's me, Derek. I have a beard. I love technology. Okay, you got me. This is Tanya, Derek's wife. He threw out his voice tonight, singing karaoke loudly in the car with me. So
I sound like this.
So I thought tonight was a great opportunity for me to tell you about my thoughts on MissionAware products, and MissionAware is our sponsor this week. My favorite MissionAware products thus far that we have gotten to enjoy are my husband's sweatshirt that is a Charles Spurgeon quote that says, "Growing a beard is a habit most natural, scriptural, manly, and beneficial," with an awesome beard on it. He's gotten stopped by little old men that are like, "Ooh, nice, nice man." And it's just always a conversation starter, and it's really well done. And I also like our big glass cup that has encouraging words in typography on it. Really, really good. So check out MissionAware at missionalware.com. Have a wonderful week, and let's hope Derek can be back with you again next week.
So are we good to start talking about maybe some hope here, some fixes, the reasons why the world is not actually doomed, unless it is doomed, in which case we can talk more about that.
Well, so the first hope is that privilege escalations are not scary. Okay. What I mean by that is, inside of my business, if someone says to me, we don't want to patch this month for this reasons, and the only patches that Microsoft or whoever has pushed out our privilege escalations, I'll say, yeah, we can wait a month. We can wait a couple weeks. We can delay patching for that. Mm-hmm. If there's a remote code execution, though, I would turn to them and say no. So privilege escalation can happen often through something like a phishing email, where you have to click on the email specifically and then give it access to things in order for it to do whatever it's going to do.
Yeah.
Whereas remote code execution is like WannaCry, where all they have to do is find your computer and they can get in if you're vulnerable to it. So, first of all, this is not the worst possible. This is not even, as far as vulnerabilities are concerned in general, this is not considered like a worst possible vulnerability. What makes this vulnerability so bad is how many things it impacts.
Oh, and I don't think we actually talked about what all is actually impacted. So, we know Intel chips are impacted, AMD chips, basically ARM chips too, I believe. All phones have these chips that do speculative execution.
Yes. Well, okay. Let me pause you right there. Yeah. Meltdown is primarily just Intel because of the way Intel does out of order execution. Okay. So the reason why that's bad is so if I cook the chicken a certain way, if the pumpkin comes out this way, it says, you usually cook the chicken this way, therefore I'm going to do that. And then what it does is it finds out, oh, it didn't actually cook, the pumpkin didn't cook it right so that I can make the chicken, so I need to recook the chicken, right? What it then does is it goes and it destroys that information, the original chicken. It says, yep, you're done. No one can see you. No one can touch you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not only that, the user watching this happening didn't see any of that occur. But the way Meltdown works is this out-of-order execution, because it's doing these things, and please actually read the articles linked, because I'm not a CPU expert, and I'm not an expert on this at all. So I might get some of this wrong or mislead you somewhat. This is the best of my ability, but please, there are going to be two links, one to a video and one to an article. Both of them do a much better job than I ever could of explaining this. So please either watch the video or read the article after this if you are at all interested in this conversation, because what you are going to find is I've said some of this very poorly or maybe even wrongly. So what happens at the end of this out-of-order execution is it kills those things from happening and incinerates them. Nothing happens. But the issue that's not correct is there is a way, because of the way Intel does this, for the process in the user area of CPU's memory to tell that, oh, when I do something, it causes this reaction in that private area that I can't see, that secret area. And so what it's doing is you're saying, okay, if every time I do this, it does this in the private area, then when I see this happening in the private area, that must mean that's what it's doing there. And so what the patches are doing is it's cutting off the ability to tell from the application level, from the non-secret area, what's happening in the secret area. Mm-hmm. Right. And that is what's, and so because of the way Intel does some things the way it does, if you update the firmware, which isn't out yet, and you do the patches to, I don't think Apple has come out with a patch for this yet, but Microsoft has, all the Linux systems have it. Like I said, I haven't heard of Apple specifically having a particular fix for this.
There was some Safari update for Spectre, but yeah, generally there hasn't been like a full update to address this on all other systems yet.
Yeah, and so what Meltdown is worse than Spectre, because you basically find out everything that's happening in the CPU cache. Like, you learn very quickly what's happening there. Mm-hmm. It sounds like this would be a complicated, difficult thing to do, but it's not. It's if you point at it right, it's easy. And some of the stuff you can see online they'll show you, there are GIFs online where you can see people running this exploit, and it's just giving you all the information, just everything that the CPU is doing, and which is horrible, which is the worst possible thing that could ever happen. Well, anyway, it's really bad. So, but anyway, there are patches for Meltdown, and that really only affects Intel and maybe one or two other chipsets. Spectre is really complicated, and I don't know that I fully have a complete grasp of it.
That's okay.
I'm gonna try really
hard. We won't either.
So, one thing to remember before I get to this next part is, so CPUs are fast, but physics at this point, physics has stopped how fast CPUs can be, which is why we've started doing this out of order execution and this speculative execution, where we say, this usually happens, so I'm just going to do this. And I'm going to do it at the same time I'm doing this. They're doing this other thing. And because we can do that many, many, many things all at the same time, like exponentially number of things all at the same time, and we're most of the time right about what we speculate, what the CPU speculates is supposed to happen down the road, we've made CPUs much faster. Getting rid of this functionality in Meltdown is why CPUs are going to be slower because of this patch. Because this is a way we artificially made it faster by saying, eh, just do all these things at the same time. And as long as no one can see what we're doing, we're fine. Well, we can see it. And so that's why we have to stop doing it.
Mm-hmm. Which is something we didn't mention, that like patches to this are going to end up probably slowing down processors in general. We can talk about how much later, but
yeah, we need to talk about that. But I will say this, most people aren't going to be impacted.
yeah.
I've heard the word negligible coming up quite a bit in relation to that, but we can get to that.
The biggest impact of Spectre is like in browsers. That's why all the browsers are coming out with patches for Spectre. Basically, what Spectre does is it's doing things while other processes are doing things, and through using the speculation that CPUs do and watching what other processes are doing at the same time, it can help determine what those processes are doing. Mm-hmm. So where this really becomes dangerous is things like browsers, where one tab can see what another tab is doing. So if I'm on a website that has an ad on it that's doing this speculative work against the CPU, and at the same time, I've got another tab open where I'm doing banking information, it now sees all my, it can get my password, it can get all my banking information, everything I'm doing. I'd made a transfer, it can see that transfer. And potentially start injecting into those sorts of processes. So I will say this about Spectre. It's very difficult to accomplish. No one has figured out how to do it except for these people who have not posted how they did it yet, though they will pretty soon. And it's much more of a targeted thing. That being said, there is no real fix for Spectre right now. The fix for Spectre, and this is not an exaggeration, is get a new CPU, which does not exist yet.
Yeah.
every CPU made in the last 20 years has this. So if you have a computer younger than 1997, your CPU has this issue. Windows 95.
Unless
is
you
good.
Have like a Raspberry Pi, apparently. Apparently, Raspberry Pis are immune, which just means they're using old CPUs.
Well, and their CPUs are not as concerned with speed as other people in the same way. Mm-hmm. They're not doing a lot of this. They're not doing speculation. They're not doing this out of order.
Does fixing this mean that we, like, I've heard people saying fixing this will mean rolling back at innovation 20 years in CPU manufacturing, like in CPU technology. Is that sort of the outcome, that we just have to go, well, this seemed like a good idea at the time, it's turned out to be a mistake, so we have to take a big backward step? Or is it more just a case of they'll figure out something else that does the same thing but more securely?
Here's the problem. CPUs are fundamentally insecure just for the very, by their nature. They were not designed thinking about security way, way below even what we're talking about. Like way before in a CPU, even what we're talking about, there's a thing called implicit trust. And implicit trust means if you send a command to the CPU, it's going to implicitly trust that you meant to send it and it should do whatever you... It's not going to ask, like, is this something that even should be done? It's just going to do it. It's dependent on the operating system and other things in place in the computer to determine whether or not those commands should make it to the CPU. But when the CPU gets it, it's just going to be like, all right, I'm down, whatever. Just tell me what to do. I'm going to do it.
So it has no moral compass is what you're saying. We got to tie this back into, you know, Christianity, all right?
Yeah. CPU is an amoral monster.
There you go.
And a mindless consumer as well.
Completely mindless, yes.
Oh, that's great.
The short answer is no. This is not going to knock us back 20 years necessarily. But it is going to have to to fix this is going to require a fundamental change in the way CPUs are actually architected. And it is going to cause a performance hit. So some interesting things. So Microsoft created one of the first big patches for this at an operating system level. That's not true. Linux had done it in December. Microsoft was one of the first big ones that people cared about, though. That released a fix for this right away. What it did is the operating system said, hey, this what's called the user context, the applications that are allowed to see what their own context said, okay, now you can't see this other area. One of the interesting side effects of this is antivirus systems were using this as kind of a sneaky way to see what the what's the operating system was doing behind the scenes. So they could look for what are called rootkits and other things. So they could see if there's some malware happening at kind of a foundational operating system level that they wouldn't otherwise be able to see. And so when Microsoft stopped the applications from being able to see this secret area, antiviruses especially started causing computers to get the blue screen of death. So people would install the patch and their computer would fundamentally stop working. And there was really no fix for that. Like if that happened to you, your computer might be done. Microsoft, to stop this from happening, did two things. One, it said, hey, antiviruses, you need to fix this on your end. And you need to tell us when you fixed it. And the way they tell Microsoft they can fix it is they change the registry. The problem is not every antivirus system is changing the registry. And so this guy made this Google Doc to say whether or not your antivirus is changing the registry. Microsoft, the patch Tuesday for this month, the patches they push out on the second Tuesday of every month, requires this registry edit to be in place for them to patch. So why that's a big deal, if you have a Windows computer and this registry has not been changed for you, and you're using an antivirus that doesn't change the registry, you will never get Windows patches again unless this you change the registry manually. So go look at the Google document. It has whether or not it has a list of a bunch of antiviruses. It says whether or not they set the registry key, whether or not they've even pushed out a fix for this issue, and then it gives a link that for that specific antivirus to explain like how it fixes it. So if you're on Windows 10 and you're using Windows Defender and Malwarebytes, like I recommended a couple shows ago, you're covered. Malwarebytes fixes it and sets the registry key. Windows Defender fixes it and sets the registry key. So you're good on both those. But if otherwise, you should take a look at the Google Doc, which is in the show notes, because otherwise you're not ever going to get Windows patches again, which is much, much worse than either Meltdown or Spectre. If you're not getting Windows patches, that is much, much worse than Meltdown or Spectre, I promise, because you are going to get those remote code execution vulnerabilities. You're going to get the WannaCries. The other thing is the slowdown you kind of asked about. The only people who are going to be impacted by a slowdown are server owners. 99.99% of normal people on their computers are never going to notice a difference because the change in CPU is going to be so negligible that it doesn't matter. But if you host a database, if you have a hypervisor, if you do a lot of what are called I/O, input output, so if you have an application that just does a lot of writing to disk and reading from disk, that could impact. So web servers, servers that host websites might be impacted, but really the big one that everyone's worried about is databases could be severely impacted. And there is no specific numbers, but people are seeing everywhere from 5% on the low end to the highest I've seen is 40% CPU speed hit. So businesses like my own are spending a lot of time trying to determine how this is going to impact them at a server level. And this includes things like people who, so there's some, it's funny, Microsoft pushed this out, was pushing out this fix before it was announced to the world. They were pushing it out in December. And they started pushing the big fix out like a couple days before, for most people, a couple days before this was all announced. So right around the new year, there are actual support tickets on their forums where people are saying, hey, I noticed my CPU is much, much slower and my IO is not, like, I've noticed a hit. What's going on? And they found out after the fact that, oh, Microsoft pushed out this patch to their cloud and it's starting to impact people. People are seeing. And here's the truth. Most companies push their servers to the absolute limit. And so even if it's a 1% fix, some companies are going to be hit real hard. I've seen servers in my own environment that are at the height. We have certain times of the month that use a lot more resource intensive than other times. And during that time, I've seen CPUs that are using on average 9.9999% CPU capacity. And it doesn't alert us unless it's one more nine after that. Like, just uses an insane amount of CPU. Like it's just maxing out, but it's working, right? It's doing exactly what we expect it to do. But that also means that if you lose a 1% hit or even a 0.5% hit at that level, I mean, it's catastrophic to that server. So that's those are kind of the issues that people are dealing with. If you use a hypervisor, that means that everything in all the other virtual machines can potentially see what other virtual machines are doing. If you use a server that has these high usage, then going losing some CPU could be very impactful to you. Especially, and yeah, if you take a 5% hit or a 40% hit or a 30% hit, like it's, it could be truly tragic.
Yeah. All right. So in terms of sum up, and what to do about it, Linux users already have an update and they're probably fine.
As long as they're updating.
As long as you're updating.
It seems to me that most Linux users are the kind of people who are updating, right? Like,
oh, yeah. If you're a Linux user, you already know whether or not you're patched for this. You don't need my help.
This is not even a question.
And you probably know more about this than I do. And you're like, Alex, you were wrong about these seven things and blah, blah, blah. And you're right. So please go to Slack and point out where I was wrong from a technical level, because it's very interesting to me.
In that voice that Alex just used as well.
Yes. And please, then, please show your nerdiness. I've been doing it.
And Microsoft users, you may or may need to do something on your end. Check the show notes for the link to see if your antivirus has changed a thing. Otherwise, you need to change it. Apple users, you just basically have to wait for a patch, pretty much, right?
Yes.
Why is Apple so slow on this? Do you know why that would be, Alex? Is it affecting them less than others, or are they just in slow to the party?
I think Apple's like Intel everything.
Yeah.
And they use ARM.
They have said that they're working on an update. Like, they have communicated about this. So, it's coming. And I don't know anything about Android phones. There's going to be a lot of Android phones screwed just because they are no longer updated by the OEMs anyway. But, yeah. So, anyway, that's kind of the lay of the land.
By the way, I have an iPhone. I love my iPhone. My family loves my iPhone. I don't otherwise use Macs, but Macs are great. It's pretty disappointing that this went out to the world on January 2nd, and I'm looking at it right now. Apple's response happened on January 9th. That is crazy saw, and they still don't have a patch for it. They need to get this done.
Yeah, keep those updates rolling on your phone and iPad and laptop. Make sure that you keep getting those updates. Yeah, so that's Meltdown Inspector. Alex, thank you so much for joining us this week and lending us your knowledge and expertise as someone who's into InfoSec.
Hopefully people are less scared, because it's bad, but it's mostly bad for large businesses and servers.
Yeah.
It's not as bad for the layman.
Right. How can people contact you?
So I used to be on The Rugged Marriage. You can still get shows on The Rugged Marriage till April of 2018. And then we're not going to pay for it anymore. So most of the episodes are going to go away. So you can get them and you can download them. And that was a great, great show. It still has a lot of great content on them that could be really helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
For Christians and marriages. But I've unplugged for most of the internet. But I'm still on Twitter. I mostly talk about InfoSec stuff. And then sometimes I post Bible verses and stuff. And I like to interact with people when I have time on there, which is less than I used to. But I still do it. So if you're interested in InfoSec or text talk or your... Every once in a while, some interesting links I post on Twitter. I'm at EntrepreLife, and I'll put that in the show notes.
We'll have all that stuff in the show notes. And if you would like to contact us, you can reach out on Twitter as well at TechReformation. Hit us up there or join us in the Slack, in our Slack community. That's slack.techreformation.com is where you can sign up and have a link to go straight to it. We have a lot of great conversation there, and we would love to hear your clarifications on our conversation on Spectre and Meltdown and get into all that nerdy goodness. So thank you for listening to Tech Reformation this week. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. And I ain't looking back.